the length of the Calderon Valley. She had barely caught her breath in the pre-dawn darkness when she heard the drumming beats of running horses coming along the road, swift and steady. She seized Odiana's wrist and dragged her back toward the edge of the causeway, but it was too late. Riders, blazing along the fury-crafted stones of the causeway, were already upon them and all but ran them down before bringing their horses, huge, plunging shapes in the darkness, rearing and fighting to a halt. "Mistress Isana?" gasped a startled young man's voice from the darkness. "What are you doing out here?" Isana blinked up at the riders, startled. "Frederick?" "Yes, ma'am," the young man said. He spoke quietly to the horse and then slid from the animal's back, keeping a hand on the reins.
"Furies, ma'am, but we didn't think we'd see you again. Are you all right?"
The other rider slid down, and Isana recognized Steadholder Roth from the pale white shock of hair drifting around his head. He stepped to her at once and embraced her.
"Thank goodness, Isana. We feared the worst."
She leaned against the old steadholder, suddenly feeling the exhaustion in her arms and legs, and had to have Rill's help to keep the tears from her eyes.
"I'm all right. It was a near thing, but I'm all right." "Who is this?"
Roth asked, looking up past Isana to squint at where Odiana sat beside the road, looking at nothing, her expression listless.
"It's a long story. I'll take care of her. But what are you doing out here?"
"Out riding," Roth said, and turned to nod back down the road.
From down the causeway came the drum of more hooves, the rattle of cartwheels strained by the pace. Isana watched as more horses, some pulling heavy farm carts, others bearing riders, came down the road toward them. Frederick let out a sharp whistle and waved his arms, and the carts began to slow to a halt as they approached.
"But what are you doing?" Isana demanded.
Roth's expression looked very tired in the dimness.
"Isana, the Marad got into the valley yesterday, sometime last night. They attacked Aldo Holt and burned it down. As far as we can tell, no one made it out."
Isana took a deep breath, shocked. She felt dizzy.
"Everyone?"
Roth nodded.
"We saw the fires at dawn, and Warner and his boys went to check it out. He sent them out to warn Garrison and to Reaver. The two heading for Garrison were murdered. We found them cut up not 2 miles back. We don't know about the others."
"Oh, no," Isana breathed.
"Oh, Fury's poor Warner."
"Then tonight, Frederick here was out in the fields working."
Frederick nodded.
"That big rock. I didn't get it before the storm, and I couldn't sleep and all, so I was back there tonight, Mistress Isana. And these two men just fell out of the sky."
"Out of the sky? Knight's Heiress?"
"Yes, ma'am. And one of them was all in black, and one was in Reaven colours, ma'am, and hurt, so I hit the other one on the head with my shovel."
His voice had an anxious note to it, as though he wasn't sure he'd done correctly.
"That wasn't wrong, was it?"
"Course not, boy," Roth snorted. "He was a messenger from Garrison, Isana, sending to Reaver for reinforcements. Said a Marat horde was on its way, and someone wanted him dead pretty bad. He had an arrow in him, and they'd sent a knight to chase him to ground. Frederick here put a dent in the murderer's noggin that won't come out for a while, or we'd have asked who sent him."
Frederick ducked his head. The wagons halted, and a moment later Otto and Warner had both hurried up to them and each hugged Isana. Otto with warm relief, Warner with stiff, quiet determination.
"So you're heading to Garrison?" Isana asked them.
Warner nodded.
"We sent messengers to Reaver, through the woods, where anyone watching from the air wouldn't be able to follow them. But it will take them longer than by the air or the roads, so we're heading out to fill in the gap ourselves."
Isana looked back at the wagons, at the people filling them.
"Great furies, Warner. You must have brought half of your holders."
"A bit more,"
Otto said, anxious. He wrung his hands.
"Everyone able or who can do some useful crafting, Isana."
"These people aren't soldiers," Isana protested.
"No,
Warner said quietly. But all the men have done their time in the legions. Isana, if Garrison falls, there's nothing that's going to stop a horde from doing what it did to Aldoholt, to every Steadholt between here and Reva. Better for us to give our help and it not be needed than the other way around.
What about the children?
Some of the older ones led the youngers into the back country, Beggar's Cave and such places. They'll be safer there than in the Steadholts until this blows over.
Isana blew out a breath. What about Tavi, my brother? Has anyone seen them?
No one said anything until Frederick rubbed at his hair and said, I'm sorry, mistress. No one's seen or heard from anyone that ran out the night of the storm. We figured you all was dead.
That'll do, Frederick, Roth said sternly. The woman's exhausted. Isana, you and this girl get in the back of the lead wagon there. Otto, get something warm in them and around them, and we'll get moving again.
Right, Otto said, and took Isana's arm. He reached down for Odiana's, but the woman flinched from him and let out a high-pitched little sound.
I'll do it, Isana told him, and leaned down to touch Odiana's chin. A broiling storm of emotion flowed up her from the touch, and Isana had to work to hold it away. She lifted Odiana's face to hers and murmured, only moving her lips, Get in the wagon. Odiana stared blankly at her, but rose when Isana tugged on her arm and climbed up into the wagon willingly enough, settling in a back corner, eyes flicking out from behind her tangled hair to watch the other holders in it. Isana climbed in beside her, and a moment later the wagon began rattling down the causeway again. Someone passed her a heavy blanket, which she draped over the both of them, and a moment later a flask of something hot. She drank, some kind of spiced wine that burned in her belly, but made her limbs feel warm and less tired. She passed the flask to Odiana, who had to hold it in her hands for a long moment, as though she had to work up the courage to drink, and who curled up beneath the blanket and dropped into what seemed to be an exhausted sleep a moment after.
You look exhausted, Otto said from across the cart, his face sympathetic. Try to get some rest. We'll be in garrison soon, but try.
Isana passed him the flask and shook her head. I'm not tired, Otto, honestly. I've too much on my mind. But after she sat back again, she leaned her head against the back of the cart and didn't wake up until the driver called back to Otto,
Hold her! There it is!
Isana jerked awake and sat up enough to see ahead of the cart. The morning was cold on her face and throat, and the icy coating on the ground gleamed in the pale light of a dawn that was not far away. Smoke hung over Garrison like a funeral shroud. Isana's heart lurched into her throat. Were they too late? Had the fort already been attacked? She climbed up onto the driver's seat of the wagon, even as the driver, one of Otto's holders, began to cluck to the horses that pulled the wagon, slowing them from their fury-enhanced speed. Their breath steamed in the dim light. As they approached, Isana saw a single young legionare on guard duty above the western gate of garrison. A second look showed that he wore a heavy swath of bandages over his forehead and left eye, and that those bandages were so recent that they were still spotted with blood. A dark bruise discolored his cheek, though it looked a day old at least. As the group of wagons and horses closed, the young soldier leaned out, staring at them. Warner raised a hand to the guard.
Hello, the gate! Let us in!
The young man stammered. Sir, you shouldn't be here. The Marat are attacking, sir. You shouldn't be bringing holders here right now.
I know the Marat are attacking, Warner snapped. We've come to help, and everyone here has something they can do. Let us in!
The young legionare hesitated, but there was a motion on the wall behind him, and a man in a dented centurion's helmet appeared.
Older Warner?
Giraldi, Warner said with a curt nod. We heard you were having company and thought we'd invite ourselves over to help you entertain them.
Giraldi stared down at them for a moment and then nodded.
Warner, he said.
You'd be better off turning around and heading for Reva while you still can.
His words silenced every holder on the ground below. Isana stood up in the wagon's seat.
Good morning, Centurion. Have you seen my brother?
Giraldi squinted down and then his eyes widened.
Isana? Oh, thank the Furies. Your brother is here. He's inside at the east gate. Isana the Count's been badly wounded. And Livia is back in Reva with her daughter. Hager and the Legion crafters did what they could, but they say without more skilled help he won't live.
Isana nodded calmly. She let her awareness slowly out toward Giraldi, gaining the sense of the man's emotions. Anger, weariness, and most of all despair hung on him like a coating of thick, cold mud, and Isana shivered.
I take it the Marat have already attacked.
Just their vanguard, Giraldi said. The rest of the horde will be here within the hour.
Then we'd best stop wasting time with talk, Giraldi. Open the gates.
I don't know if the Count would...
The Count has no say in this, Isana said.
And if the Marat take garrison, they'll be able to destroy everything we have. We've the right to fight to defend our homes and families as well, Giraldi. And every man here who is of age is a Legion veteran. Open the gates.
Giraldi bowed his head and nodded to the young Legionare.
Furies know we need the help. Do it.
The holders moved into garrison in short order, and Isana noticed that adult men, the veterans, drove all the wagons. They pulled into the fortress as though part of the Legion on duty there, lining up their wagons in neat rows in the westernmost courtyard. Men started caring for the horses at once, unhitching them and leading them to be watered and sheltered from the winter winds. Every Legion camp was laid out identically, enabling veterans and newly transferred units to be exactly aware of the operations and layout of any camp they came to. Even as some men picketed the horses, others began forming up the veterans into files outside the armory, and Giraldi and another young Legionare began to outfit them with shields, swords, spears, breastplates, helmets. Isana stepped down from the wagon, holding Odiana's hand, and leading the dazed woman, who kept the blanket wrapped around her like a sleepy child.
Haga, Isana called, spotting the healer supervising a number of young women, barely more than children, really, who were shredding bedsheets into bandages.
The old healer turned when he saw her, a tired smile touching his face.
Help, he said. Well, maybe we can make a fight of it after all.
She moved to him and embraced him quietly. Are you all right?
Tired, he said.
He looked around them and then said,
This is bad, Isana. Our wall isn't high enough, and our knights went down in the first attack.
Isana's throat tightened. My brother?
A little banged up, but well, Haga said. Isana, we've got less than an hour. By the time the sun rises, you'll be able to walk from here to the watchtowers on Marat's shoulders.
She nodded. There. See Steadholder Otto? He's a strong crafter. Not too delicate, because he mostly crafts injured livestock rather than people. But he can mend broken bones better than anyone I've ever seen. And he can do it from dawn to dark. There are one or two other men at least as skilled as a Legion watercrafter, and many of the women are better. You have injured?
Plenty, Haga said, his eyes calculating. Really? Women better than a Legion watercrafter?
See Otto. He'll get our healers over to help yours. You're in the eastern courtyard? Haga nodded, blinking his eyes a few times. Then he clasped Disana's shoulder.
Thank you. I don't know if it will do any good in the long run, but there are men dying who won't have to now.
Isana touched her hand with his and said,
Where can I find Bernard?
On the wall above the gate, Haga said.
Isana nodded to him and started toward the far side of the fort. She passed the commander's quarters and the officers' barracks at the center of the fort, then walked briskly past barracks after barracks.
She found the first bodies at the near side of the eastern courtyard in the stables. Dead horses lay inside, crows already darting in and out of the stables' doors, their raucous cries rising from their darkened interiors. More bodies littered the courtyard around her. Marat and the great predator birds had been tossed into a rough heap at one side of the courtyard, where they would be out of the way of the troops moving about inside. Legion casualties were laid out in neat rows on the other, troops wrapped in their cloaks, heads covered to keep the crows from their eyes. The rest of the courtyard was filled with the wounded and the dying. A bare scattering of legionaries stood watch on the walls, but there seemed to be so few of them. Isana walked forward, stunned at the carnage. She had never seen anything like it. Pain pressed on her, sensed from the wounded like heat radiating out from an oven. She shivered and folded her arms. Behind her, Odiana, still following closely and holding her hand, let out a small, frightened whimper and did not lift her head.
Isana!
She looked up to see her brother running toward her, and she didn't fight either the tears that sprang to her eyes or the smile that touched her mouth. He embraced her, hugging hard, and lifted her up off the ground as he did it.
Thank the Furies, he rumbled. I was so afraid for you.
She hugged him back, hard. Tavi? He froze for a moment, and the motion sent ice running through her. She leaned back, taking his face between her hands. What happened?
After the flood, I lost him. I couldn't track him in the storm. I managed to get the cursor girl out of the water, and then we came here.
Was he alone? Isana asked.
Not entirely, if you count that Fade was still with him. I thought you'd have found him after the flood.
She shook her head. No, I couldn't. Cord pulled me out of the river, Bernard. Her brother's eyes went flat. It's all right, she assured him, though she folded her hands over a little quiver of fear in her belly at the memory of Cord's smokehouse. His son Eric helped us escape. I got away from him.
And came here?
Not alone, Isana said. I had just reached the causeway when Warner and the rest came down the road. I rode here with them.
Warner, Bernard said.
Warner, Otto, Roth. They brought all their holders here, yours too. They've come to help.
Those idiots, Bernard sputtered.
But his eyes glittered, and he looked back toward the wall and the shattered gates leading into the fort. A rough barricade had been shoved into place, consisting of a pair of wagons upended, barrels, and bunks.
How many did he bring?
Everyone, Isana said. Nearly 500 people.
The women, too.
Isana nodded. Bernard grimaced.
I guess we've got it all resting on one throw, then.
His eyes went past her to Odiana.
Who's this?
Isana swallowed. One of Cord's slaves, she lied. She saved my life. That's a discipline collar on her, Bernard. I couldn't leave her there. He nodded, glancing back at the walls again, and let out a slow breath.
Might have been kinder, too. It's not going to be good.
Isana frowned at him and then at the walls. Bernard, do you remember when we had our hold raising?
Of course, he said.
Everyone in the valley helped with that. Brought up the whole Steadholt, walls, all in one day. He blinked and turned to her, his voice suddenly excited.
You mean that we could make the walls higher?
She nodded. If it would help. Giraldi said they weren't high enough.
It might, Bernard said. It might.
He looked around.
There. That centurion there, he's the engineer. See the braid on his tunic? We'll need his help. You tell him and I'm going to round up our earth crafters.
Bernard hurried off. Isana approached the man who glanced up, blinked at her, and then scowled at her from over a bristling grey moustache. He listened to her without speaking while she told him of her plan.
Impossible, he said. It can't be done, girl.
"I've 40 summers, Centurion," Isana retorted. "And it must be done. My brother is bringing our Earthcrafters right now." The Centurion faced her more squarely, his face and throat flushing a deep red.
"Hold folk, Crafters," he said. "This isn't a barn raising. These are siege walls."
"I don't see how that matters." The man snorted in an explosion of breath.
"These walls are made of layers of interlocking strata, girl. They're hard, flexible, heavy, and can stand up to any kind of pounding you care to dish out. But you can't just make them higher once they're in place like some pasture fence. If you go toying with the wall, you'll disrupt the foundation and the whole thing will collapse. We won't have a wall at all, much less a taller one."
"As I understand it," Isana said, "you might as well not have the wall as it stands in any case." The man blinked at her for a moment, then scowled and bowed his head, snorting from beneath his moustache. "I understand that it might be difficult, but it's worth a try, isn't it? If it works, we might be able to hold out against them. If it doesn't..." Isana shivered. "If it doesn't, then I'd just as soon it didn't take too long in any case."
"No," the engineer said finally. "If there was a chance, it might be worth the risk. But these aren't engineers. They're holders. They don't have the kind of strength it takes."
"You've never had to live in this valley, have you?" Isana said, her voice wry. "Not everyone with a strong fury wants to be a knight. There are boys barely more than children in my steadholt who can tear boulders larger than a man out of the ground. And as I see it, we have nothing to lose." The engineer eyed her.
"Impossible," he said then. "It can't be done. If I had a full corps of Legion engineers, it would still take me half a day to get that wall higher."
"Then it's a good thing we're not a corps of Legion engineers," Isana said. "Will you try?" A new voice cut into the conversation.
"He'll try."
Isana looked up to see the cursor standing not far away, wearing her brother's too large clothes and a borrowed tunic of mail. She wore a sword at her hip, and her left arm had been splinted. Amara looked tired and sported a bruise on her throat, abrasions on her chin, but she regarded the engineer calmly.
"Coordinate with the steadholders. Make the attempt."
The engineer swallowed and then inclined his head to her in a bow.
"As you wish, Countess."
The man turned and hurried away. Amara turned to face Isana, the slim girl's expression quiet, calm. Then she glanced past Isana to where the Water Witch still stood, wrapped in her blanket, her expression distant, and hissed a quiet curse. She reached for her sword.
"Wait,"
Isana said, stepping close and putting a hand over Amara's.
"Don't."
"But she's..."
"I know who she is," Isana said. "She isn't going to hurt anyone now. She saved my life, and a slaver put a discipline collar on her."
"You can't trust her," Amara insisted. "She should be locked up."
"But she's a knight herself. A mercenary. A murderer."
The cursor's voice snapped with anger.
"By all rights, I should kill her right now."
"I will not allow that," Isana said, lifting her chin. Amara faced her quietly.
"I'm not sure it's your decision to make, Holder."
Just then, a tall, dark-skinned man with the look of a Parthian, his armor magnificent but stained with smoke and blood, stepped over to them.
"Countess," he said calmly, "the Horde is nearly here. I'd like you to stand with me. See if you can spot their Horde Master."
Amara glared at Isana and turned to the Parthian.
"Do you think killing him will do us any good now, Pirellas?"
He smiled, a sudden flash of white teeth.
"As I see it, it can hardly hurt. And in any case, I'd rather make sure that whatever animal is responsible for this," he gestured around vaguely, "doesn't go back home to brag about it."
Isana withdrew a pair of steps, then calmly turned and led Odiana away from the pair. "Come on," she murmured to the collared woman, though she knew that Odiana could not hear her. "They're terrified and angry.
They wouldn't treat you fairly. Let's find some place for you to be out of sight until we can get through this. She hurried through the courtyard to one of the large warehouse buildings at the far side. Even as she opened the door and hurried in, a group of holders, bundled up in their homemade winter cloaks but wearing Legion steel, went tramping by in neat files, heading for the gates. Another file, led by Bernard and the engineer, speaking in hushed, intent tones, went past right behind them. Isana opened the door and led Odiana into the warehouse. The interior was dark, and she could hear the scrabble of rats somewhere inside. A rangy grey tomcat rushed past her legs and into the darkness, intent on a meal. Crates and heavy sacks stood in neat, ordered rows, their contents clearly labelled. It was too dim to see clearly, so Isana looked about until she found a fury lamp and willed it to life, lifting the clear globe in her hand and looking up and down the rows. "There," she said, and started to tug the woman forward, continuing to speak in a low, quiet tone, hoping that the deafened watercrafter would at least find some comfort in the intent of the words. "Bags of meal. It will be softer than the floor, and if you cover up, you might be able to get some sleep. You'll be out of everyone's way." She hadn't taken a dozen steps when the door to the warehouse slammed behind her. Isana whirled, holding the fury lamp aloft, shadows dancing and spinning wildly in the room. Cord, dressed in a dirty cloak, dropped the heavy bolt down over the reinforced door of the warehouse. He turned to Isana then, eyes gleaming, and smiled, his teeth as grimy and smudged as the steadholder's chain about his neck. "Now then," he said, his voice quiet, almost purring. "Where were we?"
Chapter 39 Amara nodded to Pirellas. "But will they be able to raise the wall?"
Pirellas shrugged. "Again, it can't hurt. The wall isn't going to slow the Marat down as it stands in any case."
Nearby, Bernard and the engineer had led nearly 100 men and women, ranging in age from those below Legion age to a wizened old grandmother who dodded along with the help of a cane and the arm of a brawny, serious-looking young man Amara recognized from Bernard Holt.
"Are you sure it isn't a terrible risk? We held it before," Amara pointed out.
"Against Marat, who'd never seen a battle," Pirellas said. "Half-trained green troops. And we were nearly destroyed as it was. Don't fool yourself. We got lucky. There are 5 times as many of them out there now. They're experienced, and they won't be operating in separate tribes."
His fingers drummed on the hilt of his dark blade.
"And remember, those knights are still out there."
Amara shivered and abruptly looked behind her. "Exactly. Which is why, Mistress Isana, we should..." She broke off abruptly. "Where'd she go?"
Pirellas looked around behind him, then shrugged. "Don't worry about it. There's a very limited amount of trouble the woman can make in any case. That's the advantage of certain death, Cursor. It's difficult to become impressed by further risks."
Amara frowned at him.
"But with this help..."
"Doomed," Pirellas said flatly. "We'd need 3 times that many troops to hold, Cursor. What these holders are doing is admirable. But unless one of their messengers got through to Reva..."
He shook his head.
"Without reinforcements, without more knights, we're just killing time until sunrise. See if you can spot the Horde Master, and I'll try to help them sort out the wounded and get more men back on their feet."
She started to speak to him, but Pirellas spun on his heel and walked back to the other courtyard. His knee was swollen and purpling, but he did not allow himself to limp. Another talent she envied in metal crafters. Amara grimaced and wished she could will away the pain of her broken arms so easily, or the fear that still weakened her knees. She shivered and turned to walk toward the gates purposefully.
The barricade had been hastily removed as the Earthcrafters had begun to set up for their attempt on the walls. A squad of 20 legionaries stood outside the broken gates in formation, on guard, lest any Marat should try to slip through undetected. The possibility seemed unlikely. Even as Amara walked beneath the walls and out into the open plain beyond, stepping around the grim and silent young men, she could see the Marat horde in the slowly growing light, like some vast field of living snow, marching steadily closer in no great hurry. Amara walked out away from the walls by several yards, keeping her steps light and careful. She tried not to look down at the ground. The blackened remains of the Marat who had perished in the first firestorm lay underfoot and all around, grotesque and stinking. Crows flapped and squabbled everywhere, mercifully covering most of the dead. If she looked, Amara knew, she would be able to see the gaping sockets of the corpses whose eyes had already been eaten away, usually along with parts of the nose and the soft, fleshy lips. But she didn't. The air smelled of snow and blood, of burned flesh, and faintly of carrion. Even through the screen Cirrus provided her sense of smell, she could smell it. Her knees trembled harder, and she grew short of breath. She had to stop and close her eyes for a moment before lifting them to the oncoming horde again. She lifted her unwounded arm and bade Cirrus make her vision more clear. The fury bent the air before her, and almost at once she could see the oncoming horde as though she stood close enough to it to hear their footsteps. Almost at once she could see what Pyrrhus had meant. Though the fleeing elements of the Marat horde had rejoined it half an hour before and been absorbed into the oncoming mass, she could see the difference in the warriors now moving toward garrison without needing to engage them to understand part of Pyrrhus's fears. They were older men, heavier with muscle and simple years, but they walked with more of both confidence and caution, ferocity tempered with wisdom. She shivered. Women, too, walked among the horde, bearing weapons, wearing the mien of experienced soldiers, which Amara had no doubt that they were. As near as Alaran intelligence could determine, the Marat engaged in almost constant struggles against one another, small-scale conflicts that lasted only briefly and seemed to result in few lasting hostilities, almost ritual combat. Deadly enough, though. She focused on the horde grimly. The dead behind the walls of garrison proved that. As she watched them come on, Amara was struck by a sudden sense that she had not felt in a long time. Not since, as a small child, she had first been allowed out onto the open sea with her father in his fishing boat. A sense of being outside. A sense of standing balanced at the precipice of a world wholly alien to her own. She glanced at the walls behind her, eyes twinging as they refocused. There stood the border of the mighty realm of Alera, a land that had withstood its enemies for 1,000 years, overcome a hostile world to build a prosperous nation. And she stood outside it, all but naked despite her armor. The sheer size and scope of the rolling plains that lay beyond this last bastion of Alaran strength made her feel suddenly small. The voice that came to her whispered in the rustle of the lonely wind, low, indistinct.
"Never be intimidated by size itself. I taught you better than that."
Amara stiffened, dropping the vision crafting before her hand, glancing around. "Fidelius?"
"You always hold your legs stiffly when you're afraid, Amara. You never learned to hide it. Oh, and I can hear you," the voice responded. "One of my men is crafting my voice to you and listening for your replies."
"I have nothing to say to you," Amara whispered, heated. She glanced at the legionaries too close behind her and stepped forward away from them so that they couldn't overhear. She lifted her hand again, focusing on the oncoming horde, searching through their ranks for one who might be their leader.
"Useless," Fidelius commented. "You can't hold the walls, and even if you do, we'll break the gate again."
"Which part of 'I have nothing to say to you' did you not understand?" She paused a moment, and then added as viciously as she knew how, "Traitor!"
"Then listen," Fidelius said. "I know you don't agree with me, but I want you to think about this. Gaius is going to fall. You know it. If he doesn't fall cleanly, he'll crush thousands on his way down. He might even weaken the realm to the point that it can be destroyed."
"How can you dare speak to me of the safety of the realm? Because of you, her sons and daughters lie dead behind that wall."
"We kill people," Fidelius said. "It's what we do. I have dead of my own to bury, thanks to you. If you like, I'll tell you about the families of the men you made fall to their deaths. At least the dead inside had a chance to fight for their lives. The ones you murdered didn't. Don't be too liberal with that particular brush, apprentice."
Amara abruptly remembered the men screaming, falling. She remembered the terror on their faces, though she hadn't taken much note of it at the time. She closed her eyes. Her stomach turned over on itself. "If you have something to say, say it and have done. I have work to do."
"I've heard dying can be quite the chore," Fidelius's voice noted. "I wanted to make you an offer."
"No," Amara said. "Stop wasting my time. I won't take it."
"Yes, you will," Fidelius said. "Because you don't want the women and children behind those walls to be murdered with the rest of you."
Amara stiffened. She felt suddenly cold.
"Leave," Fidelius said. "You, lead the women and children away. I'll have my knight see that the Marata delayed long enough to give you a safe lead."
"No," she whispered. "You're lying. You can't control the Marat."
"Don't be so sure," Fidelius said. "Amara, I don't like what has to be done. But you can make a difference. You can save the lives of innocent people of the realm. You lead them. If you don't, personally, then there's no deal."
There was silence for a moment before he said, weariness in his voice,
"You don't know what you're doing, girl. I don't want to see you die for it. And if I can save the lives of some non-combatants while protecting you, so much the better."
Amara closed her eyes, her head spinning. The stench of the burned corpses, of the carrion the crows had torn into, came to her again. She was a curser, a skilled fencer, an agent of the crown, a decorated heroine of the realm. But she did not want to die. It terrified her. She had seen the men the Marat had killed, and none of them had gone pleasantly. She had joked before, lightly, that she would never want to end her life in less than a viciously bloody fashion, as alive as she could possibly be. But the reality of it was different. There wasn't any consideration in it, no abstract philosophy, just glittering animal eyes and terror and pain. It made sense, she reasoned. Fidelius wasn't a monster. He was a man like any other. He had cared about her when they worked together, almost more than her father had in some ways. It was reasonable to assume that he did not want to see her die if he could avoid it. And if she could save some more people, if she could lead those who would surely die away from the coming struggle, surely it would be worth it. Surely there would be no shame for her in fleeing, no dishonor before the crown, or before Bernard's memory. It wouldn't be wrong. Fidelius was giving her a way out, an escape.
"Amara," Fidelius's voice said gently, "there isn't much time. You must go quickly if you are to save them."
She abruptly saw the trap. Though she didn't understand it yet, though she wasn't sure exactly where it lay, she recognized what he had scattered out to blind her. Raw emotions, fear, the desire to protect, the need to save her own pride. He had played on them, just as he had tried to put her into a raw, emotional state of terror and grief when he had betrayed her before. "I must go quickly," she said quietly. "I must go, me, or there's no deal." She took a breath and said, "Why would you want to make sure I was not a part of this battle, Fidelius? Why now, instead of an hour ago? Why did you make this offer only after you saw me observing the enemy?"
"Don't do this to yourself, Amara," he said.
Don't rationalize your way out of life. Don't let it kill those children.
She swallowed. He was right, of course. Perhaps she was being manipulated. Perhaps accepting his offer would mean that she had sacrificed some unknown advantage. But could she really argue against that statement? Could she make some attempt to play at maneuvers against him, here, now, when she would almost certainly die? And when it would cost the lives of children? Run, save them. Grieve with the crown over the valley's loss.
Your purpose as a cursor is to save lives, Amara. Stay true to your purpose, and let me stay true to my choice.
The crows croaked and swooped all around her. She opened her mouth to agree. But a sudden sound stopped her. Without warning, the ground began to rumble, low, hard, rhythmic. She staggered and had to crouch to keep her balance. She looked back at the walls of garrison. A shout went up from the legionaries, who immediately marched forward, away from the walls, breaking into ragged formation as the pitching of the earth made them stagger left and right. They came out to the same distance she stood at and turned to stare at the walls with her. The walls of garrison heaved and shuddered, like a sleeper stirring. They rippled, a slow wave rolling through the seamless grey stone, and then with a screeching of breaking earth they began to grow. Amara stared at it in sudden wonder. She'd never seen any such feat done on such a scale before. The walls rolled up higher, like a wave approaching the shore. They ground forward several paces toward the enemy until Amara realized that they were growing thicker at the base to support the greater height. The walls grew, and the grim grey stone began to streak with ribbons of scarlet and azure twined within the rock, the colours of Alera proper, and then with scarlet bound with gold, the colours of the Legion's home city of Riva. The battlements grew higher, and with an abrupt shriek of stone, spikes erupted at the summit of the battlements, and then sprang out all along the walls themselves, long, slender daggers of some dark stone that gleamed in the growing light. The spikes spread, as though they were tendrils sprung from some deadly vines beneath the surface of the wall, and raced out over the ground before the walls as well, rippling into place like blades of grass growing all in an instant, their gleaming tips pointing out at the oncoming horde. The crows, dismayed, flew into the sky in a sudden storm of black wings and raucous cawing, circling around the field of battle like wreaths of panicked smoke. The rumbling eased. The walls of garrison stood, 30 feet high and grim, and bristled with razor-edged daggers of the same black stone Amara could now see that the Marat used for their own weapons. The ground itself lay ready to impale any attackers. And in the stunned silence she heard Fidelius's voice whisper, "Bloody crows." The legionaries beside her erupted into sudden cheers, and she was barely able to hold back the shout of defiance that came to her own throat. She snapped an order to the men to send them back inside, and they began picking their way painfully across the field of spikes before the wall. One of the men slipped and cut his leg, drawing of all things a sudden and enthusiastic discussion about how sharp the spikes were and how well they'd cut him. The loudest voice of praise was from the injured man. More cheers rose up from inside the fortress, and as Amara watched, more legionaries crowded the wall, and someone raised the banners of the Legion and of Riva into position above the gates. Within, one of the musicians began to trumpet the call to arms, and the legionaries, professional and holder alike, answered it in a sudden roar that shook the stone of the hills framing the fortress. Amara spun back out to face the horde coming over the plains and hissed, "Fight for what you want, Fidelius, but it will not be handed to you. The future of these men and women, children and soldier alike, is not cast in stone. If you want the fortress, then come and take it." There was a long and terrible silence before Fidelius responded, and when he did, his voice was calm, even.
"Goodbye, Amara."
With the softest whisper of wind,
the contact faded. Amara turned and called to Cirrus. She stepped forward and leapt lightly over the field of spikes, 30 yards or more, landing in the gate ahead of the legionaries returning from outside. Her heart pounded in swift, hot defiance, determination. She tried not to notice that it made her broken arm throb as well, with pain. Amara moved quickly into the courtyard, and the shadows of the now higher walls had changed the perspective of the entire place. It took her a moment to orient herself, but she spotted Bernard sitting at the base of the new wall with a group of jubilant-faced, panting men, talking. Shields and weaponry and breastplates lay near each man, and one of the women had brought water to them. As much seemed to have been tossed over their heads as down their throats, and their tunics were splotched with water, their breath turned to steam before smiling mouths. Pirella stood near Bernard and nodded to her when he saw her.
"Interesting," Pirella said, jerking his head back toward the wall. "It's going to force them to use their scaling poles and to try to take the gate. We'll be able to make a good fight of it, at least."
"Incredible," Amara said, grinning first at Pirellas and then at Bernard. "I've never seen anything like it." Bernard looked up with a tired smile of his own.
"Always amazing what you can do when you must,"
Pirellas asked.
"Did you spot anything?"
"No," Amara said. "But I believe our opposition was afraid that I would." She told them in brief about the conversation with Fidelius.
Bernard frowned. "You know, maybe we should get as many people as we can into the wagons and get them on the road again. Can we hold long enough to let them get away?"
Pirellas looked at the wall and then at the other side of the courtyard.
"It's a risk worth taking. I'll see to it," he said shortly. "There won't be enough room for everyone, but we could get the children out at least."
"Thank you," Amara told him. Pirellas nodded to her.
"You were right last night," he said. "I was wrong."
Then he headed out across the courtyard, steps steady despite his wounded leg. Bernard whistled and said to Amara,
"That cost him something, I think."
"Nothing he couldn't do without anyway," Amara said, her voice dry. "Bernard, those knights are still out there, and they're going to be coming in on us again."
"I know," Bernard said. "But we don't have enough knights, Eris, to hold the sky. We don't know when or where they'll come."
Amara nodded to him. "But I think I have a good guess. Here's what I want you to do." She laid out brief instructions for him, and he nodded, gathered up some more of the holders with him, and hurried off to carry out her plan. Amara checked in with Hager and then headed up onto the wall. The battlements were crowded with men, but she located Giraldi standing soberly in position at the center of the wall, over the gate. "Centurion," she greeted him.
"Countess."
"How does it look?" He nodded out toward the oncoming Marat, hardly more than a mile away now.
"They've stopped," he told her. "Out past our best bow range, even for these holder boys. They're waiting."
"For what?" He shrugged.
"Sunrise, maybe. If they give it a few minutes, the sun will be in our eyes when it comes up."
"Will it hurt us much?" He shrugged.
"It won't help."
She nodded. "How long can we expect to hold them?"
"No telling with these things. If we can keep them off the walls, out of the gates, a good long while."
"Long enough to give a group of wagons a running start?" He glanced at her.
"The holders' wagons?"
Amara nodded. "We're loading them with the women and children right now." Giraldi looked at her steadily for a moment, then nodded.
"All right, then. We'll hold them long enough. Excuse me."
He turned and stepped back from the battlements to meet a panting legionare who had made his way down the hall. Amara followed him. Giraldi frowned and asked,
"Where are those canteens, man?"
The legionare saluted.
"Sorry, sir, they're in the east warehouse, and it's already been secured."
"Already been secured," Giraldi growled. "How do you know?"
"Door was locked."
Giraldi frowned at the man.
Well, find Harger and get him to... What's that on your shoes?
Hey, sir.
Where did you get hay in your boots, Legionare?
One of the holders threw it there, sir. They're tossing it all over the courtyard.
What?
Amara stepped in. My orders, Centurion.
Ah, Giraldi said.
He swept off his helmet and rubbed at his short, cropped hair.
With all due respect, Your Ladyship, what kind of idiot order is that? If you put hay all over the courtyard, it'll make the prettiest fire you ever saw, and among our own, to boot. For all we know, they're going to be shooting flame arrows over the wall.
It's a calculated risk, Centurion, that I cannot explain here.
Lady!
Giraldi began to protest. From down the wall, someone shouted,
Sir!
Amara and Giraldi both turned to look down the wall. A pale-faced young legionare jerked his chin out toward the plains beyond the fortress.
Here they come!
Chapter 40 Amara rushed back to the battlements with Giraldi beside her and watched as the Marat horde, beneath the droning yawls of huge, hollowed animal horns, began a determined advance, moving forward at a steady trot, with wolves and herdbane loping along beside them.
Crows,
whispered one of the legionaries beside Amara. She saw the man reach for his spear, fumble it, and drop it. She flinched, hand flashing out and batting the falling weapon away from her. Giraldi caught it in one scar-knuckled hand.
Steady,
he growled, eyes on Amara. He passed the spear back to the legionare.
Steady, lads.
The horde grew closer. The sounds of thousands of feet hitting the ground as they ran rose like far-off thunder.
Steady,
Giraldi said. He looked up and down the line and barked,
Archers! Shields!
The legionaries stepped up to the battlements. In each crenellation stood a man with one of the huge legion wall shields. Behind each, another legionare, armed with a bow and a thick war quiver of arrows, strung his bow and took position. Most of the archers were holders from the valley. The Marat grew closer, the eerie droning of their horns growing louder, more unnerving. A restless shuffle went down the line of shieldmen.
Steady, Giraldi commanded.
He glanced at the young holder in borrowed armor beside him.
You sure you lads can shoot that far?
The holder peeked around the edge of the shield of the burly legionare in front of him.
Yes, they're in range.
Giraldi nodded.
Archers, he growled. Fire at will.
All up and down the line, archers set arrows to their bows, their tips pointing up at the sky, standing close to their shield man. Amara watched the nearest young man half draw his bow, then bump his partner with his hip. The legionare knelt, lowering the shield, and the archer drew as he lowered the bow, took quick aim, and loosed at the oncoming Marat. His partner stood up again swiftly, bringing his shield back into position. All along the wall the archers began shooting. Each man loosed an arrow every 5 or 6 breaths, or even faster. Amara stood beside Giraldi in the one crenellation not occupied by a shield man, and watched the arrows slither through the air and into the oncoming Marat ranks. The deadly aim of the Alaran holders dropped Marat and beast alike with equal ferocity, littering the ground with fresh corpses, making the eager crows swoop and dive in a swarm over the charging horde. But still the horde came on. The archers had begun shooting at close to 600 yards, an incredible distance Amara knew. They had to have been woodcrafters of nearly a knight's skill to manage such a feat. For perhaps a minute there was no sound but the grunt of archers drawing bows, legionaries kneeling and standing again, the droning blare of Marat horns, and the rumbling of thousands of feet. But when the Marat closed to charging range of the walls, the entire horde erupted in a sudden shout that hit Amara like a wall of cold water, chilling, terrifying in its sheer intensity. At the same time, the warbirds let out a shrill, piercing shriek, terrifying from one such beast, but from the thousands below the sound almost seemed a living thing all its own. At the same moment the sun broke the horizon across the distant plains,
a sudden harsh light that swept over the top of the battlements first and made archers flinch and squint as they attempted their next shot.
"Steady!"
Giraldi bellowed, voice barely carrying over the din.
"Spears!"
The shield-bearing centurions gripped their spears, faces set in a fighting grimace. Below, the Marat charge hit the first razor-edged defensive spikes the holders had crafted out of the earth itself. Amara watched closely, her heart in her throat. The leaders in the Marat charge began to leap and skip among the spikes, looking for all the world like children playing at hopping games. Behind them leapt their animals. Amara saw some of the Marat, with heavy knotted cudgels, begin to strike the spikes from the sides, shattering them. "The ones with clubs," Amara said. "Tell the archers to aim for them. The longer we can keep the spikes in place, the harder it will be for them to pressure the gate." Giraldi grunted and relayed her order up and down the walls, and the archers, instead of firing into the enemy at random, began to pick their targets. Scaling poles and ropes with hooks fashioned of some kind of antlers or bone began to lift toward the wall. Legionaries thrust at the poles with the cross guards of their spears, pushing them away, and some drew their swords to hack at ropes as they came up, while the archers continued to fire on the enemy. Arrows began to flicker up from the horde below, short, heavy arrows launched from oddly shaped bows. One of the archers beside Amara lingered in aiming his shot for too long, and an arrow struck him through both cheeks in a sudden welter of blood. The holder choked, dropping.
"Surgeon!"
Amara yelled, and a pair of men on the wall moved quickly to the fallen man, dragging him down before going to work on removing the arrow. Amara stepped back to the battlements. She swept her gaze over the enemy below, but she couldn't see anything beyond a horde of Marat and their beasts, so many thousands of them that it was difficult to tell where one left off and the other began. Giraldi abruptly seized her shoulder and dragged her back from the edge.
"Not without her helmet," he growled.
"I can't tell what's happening," Amara panted. She had to shout to make herself heard. "There are too many of them." Giraldi squinted out at the enemy, then drew his head prudently back.
"About half of their force is here. They're holding the rest back, ready to bring them in when they get an opening."
"Are we holding them?"
"The walls are doing all right," Giraldi called back. "But the gate is our weak point. They'll attack the walls only to keep most of our men busy up here. There are too few men at the gate. They'll force the barricade sooner or later."
"Why didn't they craft the gate closed?"
"Can't," Giraldi reported. "Engineer told me. No foundation under it for extra wall, and the interior surface is lined with metal."
From below them there came a crunching sound, and a sudden chorus of mixed Alaran war cries of "Reva for Alera!" and "Calderon for Alera!" Giraldi glanced out over the field again.
"They must have gotten part of the barricade down. The Horde Master has ordered the rest of his troops in, and they're on the move. They'll try to put pressure on the gate until the defense breaks."
Giraldi grimaced.
"If they don't repel this first thrust, we're done for."
Amara nodded to him. "All right. Almost time, then. I'll be back up as soon as I can." She leaned out to look down into the courtyard below. She could just make out the forms of a couple of legionaries standing their ground almost within the gate itself, spears thrusting. There were shrieks and cries from below, and Amara's eyes caught a flash of motion, a dark blade seen for only a second as its wielder spun it out behind him. Pirellis was holding the gate once more. Amara hurried to the nearest stairs and pelted down them to the courtyard, looking around wildly. Hay from the bales she had crashed through earlier that morning lay scattered everywhere over the courtyard. All but a few of the wounded had been pulled back to the west courtyard, and the last of them were being loaded onto stretchers. She started across the courtyard toward the stables. As she did, she saw Pluvis Pentius emerge from one of the barracks, white-faced and nervous, one hand wrapped around the hand of a little boy, whose hand stretched back behind to another child, and so on, until the truth-finder was leading half a dozen children across the courtyard. Amara hurried to him.
"Pluvis!"
What are these children still doing here?
Hiding, Pluvis stuttered. I found them hiding under their father's bunks in the barracks.
Crows, Amara spat.
Get them to the west courtyard with the wounded. They're supposed to be fortifying one of the barracks.